This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. We're joined in studio by State Representative Steve Carter. For the last 2.5 years, he's been chair of the House Education Committee, where much of the action this session is taking place, and we'll get to that in short order. But Steve Carter, for those who are unaware, was associate athletic director at LSU for several years and also was the tennis coach in Tigertown and a former tennis player for the Fighting Tigers. There's a big reunion going on, isn't there?
Yeah, there is, Jim. Thank you for allowing me to be on your show. You have a great show. It was interesting. A number of guys, particularly Jed Schwing, who had played for Coach Simmons and is from New Iberia and been around, decided he wanted to put a group together, and he did so. And boy, they had some great people there. We probably had 100, 150 people show up with their wives or other people that were interested as fans of the program. Johnny Robinson was there. Johnny looked great. Tommy Robinson was there. Les Nicholson, who had played a good bit and was a very good player at LSU from Maryland, was in attendance, as well as Steve Falk, who was a first All-American, I think, that played at LSU. And so we just had a great, great event.
This is at the Bocage.
It was at Bocage last night. Coach Simmons was there, and he had his most of his squad there, and they came in from basically all over the world. It was a great event.
Very good. Well, that was a reprieve from what's going on at the Capitol. And as I stated, you and the members of the Education Committee have been busy. Let's start with Common Core. What's going on with Common Core?
Well, you know, Common Core is an interesting topic, and Common Core is nothing new. That's what people don't understand. It was formulated when Paul Pastorek was here as superintendent of education. That's 3-4 years ago. And a number of states got together and attempted to try to do something where we could measure how are we doing not only within the United States educationally, K-12, but also globally. And so it's a program. It has been put together. They've worked on it for a number of years. It was approved with the Louisiana legislature, I think, a couple of years ago with no fanfare at all. Then all of a sudden it became a hot topic. And you know, we've got a lot of hot topics in education this year. Last week we discussed TOPS. TOPS is a hot topic, and part of the Common Core has to do with data privacy, and we had that hearing a couple of weeks ago also. So we've had a lot of action, but this week is Common Core week.
The governor was once wholeheartedly behind Common Core. He's been less enthusiastic of late. Does that mean anything?
To be honest with you, not really. The governor, you know, is, and I've helped him an awful lot with a lot of the legislation, which I applaud. I think we've done the right thing with change and attempting to try to improve us from 49th or 48th or 50th or wherever you want to measure us in the United States with our K-12. But I'm sure that the governor's involvement is, and the way he has handled this, is probably politically motivated, to be honest with you. And we're going to do the right thing. I've got a very good committee, and we've studied it very well, and we'll have a great presentation by both sides next week, and we'll make our decision to determine what we think is in the best interest of the kids in our state.
Now, what political motivation would there be for the governor?
I think you probably have a pretty good feel, as well as the rest of your viewing and listening audience do.
The presidential ambitions, that's... standing in the way of this?
That's just my personal opinion, to be honest with you. I've not discussed it with him. I'm just reading between the lines.
Well, you're a chair of perhaps the key committee. How often do you visit with him?
Last year, not that frequently, to be honest with you, and not because of what people say that he's out of town that much. The first year that I was chair, obviously, is when we handled most of the legislation, and I visited with him a great deal then. And last year, it was not as much as far as hot topics were concerned, so we didn't have that much of which we needed to discuss with him. I've got a great working relationship with Senator Appel on the Senate side. He's chairman of the Senate Education Committee. And we visit a great deal with John White and his staff. And so we work together along with Stafford and the other members of the staff, Stafford Palmieri, who's the governor's policy director for education. So we visit, but we don't visit as much as we have in the past.
And this governor, as you say, despite the travels, he is a delegating kind of governor, even when he's in his office, in town, at the mansion, he gets other people to intercede on his behalf quite a bit. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's fair to say.
Okay. 297-5633, Dr. Albert Samuels at Southern University calling in. Good morning, Albert.
Good morning, Jim. Good to talk to you, and also good morning to Representative Carter. I wanted to bring up two bills that Representative Carter has proposed that would change the method by which the members of the higher education boards are selected. I think that there are a lot of good things about that bill, actually, because I think that one of the problems with the boards over the years has been that, essentially, I think that they have been the political playgrounds of the politicians. And so I think that anything that gets us talking about having board members with some actual qualifications, you know, might be a good start. I actually would be interested in actually working with you on because one thing that I was actually concerned about was that the bill makes specific references to business and business experience, and I think that's very important. But what we also need and what we sorely lack is that oftentimes the boards don't have people who have higher education experience.
All right. Would you respond?
Yes, sir. And I appreciate your letter to the editor, which you stated that, and you're absolutely correct. To be honest with you, sir, I'm not really married to what I have put in the bill. What you said earlier is exactly my intent, is that I feel like that we need to try to find some way to have people who have had experience, and I understand that your reasoning is to have people who have had educational experience. So let me give you my number at the office. It's 362-5305, and if you will call my office, I'd love to sit down and visit with you. In fact, Rolf McCollister and Bobby Yarborough are concerned about it also, and I'm having lunch with them today. So I'm just looking to try to find the best way possible I can get people on the board that have vision, and the people on the board that have run major companies, because this is a big business. It affects an awful lot of people, and they have an awful lot of money that they have to utilize. And so I would really appreciate it if you would call me and we could sit down and visit, because I'm not married to what I have in the bill right now.
Thank you, Dr. Samuels. Good to hear from you. And Steve Carter's got a busy day. He's got lunch with the chair of the LSU board and the publisher of the Greater Baton Rouge Business Report, who also is a member of the LSU Board of Supervisors. Where are you having lunch?
We're having lunch at Little Village, I think. So if anybody wants to come by and talk to me, please feel free to do so.
Okay, you mentioned TOPS. It looks like we're going to have TOPS the way it is. People like this program. It is a big budget item, but it's hard to do away with something that is as popular as TOPS.
That's correct. And we did hear a bill, but I don't think that it's over for the session. And the reason I say that is the speaker has been working very hard with Ms. Taylor and a number of other people in the governor's office to try to find some way to maybe change TOPS to where it would save the state dollars, and that's where the problem comes in. We're educating an awful lot of people. We're educating an awful lot of people that we need to be educating that are graduating by them establishing the core courses within the requirements to be eligible for TOPS has helped an awful lot of youngsters be prepared to go to college. And so I don't think it's over yet. I do think that there are some bills. I know I talked to Senator Donahue. He has a bill. And what you don't want to do is to eliminate an awful lot of people that the TOPS program is intended for. And so if you can hit a happy medium, maybe raising standards a little bit and doing some tweaks to it, I think it'll accomplish what they want to accomplish.
Well, how can you do that?
Well, you have to raise standards, I think. I don't want to cap it. And I think that if you raise standards gradually and give youngsters an opportunity to ensure that they understand what the qualifications might be, that's one way where you can do it. And it will save some dollars. But again, it's a very fine line, and it's a difficult topic to discuss. And that's why nothing's happened in the last 2 or 3 years.
297-5633 or 877-217-5757 for State Representative Steve Carter, Republican from Baton Rouge, who is the chair of the House Education Committee. He's held that position during this term and quite likely will hold it through the next term. Have you decided to run for re-election?
I'm seriously will consider it, but I'm right now, if you had to ask me, I'd say yes, I am.
Okay, so that's 2015, as in next year. Steve Carter likely will be on the ballot. Some thought you might run for Congress.
Well, it's interesting. I'd like to. My age probably would prevent me from being effective.
Well, you're a young pup compared to one of the candidates in that race.
I didn't realize he was going to get in at the time that I made my decision, but you're right. But it would have been interesting to do. But let me just say this. I'm very happy where I am. I'm fortunate to be in the position I'm in. Mm-hmm. And my passion is kids, as you well know. And I feel like I'm in a position where I can try to improve the quality of our educational system in the state. So I'm happy where I am.
Okay. Well, a Senate bill to make it easier to create new school districts in Baton Rouge cleared the Education Committee this week. Bodie White's measure would ask voters whether districts could be approved through majority support of the legislature. What do you think of Senator White's latest maneuver?
Well, Senator White and I are good friends also. And let me say this. His heart's in the right place. He's trying to do the right thing. We obviously have some problems within our system, within EBR, and he's working to try to solve those issues. He and I have been in discussion. We may have another bill through the chamber that's been mentioned also. And there's some things that we can possibly do. The timing is good right now for us to take a look at what we possibly can do to improve our schools. And like I said, his heart's in the right place. I applaud him for trying to do what he's doing. I know it has to go on the Senate floor, and we'll see what happens there.
And then it comes to the House.
Yes.
It'd go through your committee.
That's correct. And again, there's another bill that is going, we have five bills after session mm-hmm. starts, and there's one bill that we're going to work on, and hopefully Senator White and I will work together on this bill, so we'll see what happens to his bill once this bill that we are working on is in the system.
297-5633 for Steve Carter, who's lived in Baton Rouge for a long time, and we may have St. George, Louisiana, coming soon. Do you have any thoughts about this move, which Senator White is also involved in?
Well, again, on the move of St. George, I really don't have, I'd like for us to stay together. I understand what they're trying to do. But from a school standpoint, I understand what they're trying to do, and we're working hard to try to solve that problem, and hopefully we'll solve that problem, and then we'll let St. George determine what they want to do after that.
That is something that is dominating discussion in the community. Is there a buzz at the legislature, or is this something that's largely undiscussed?
It's undiscussed. It's local, and it is a local issue, and there is a lot of discussion, but in the legislature, I've not heard one bit of discussion about it.
All right. 297-5633. We'll spend a bit more time with State Representative Steve Carter, former associate athletic director at Louisiana State University, and we'll talk with him about higher education as well. 877-217-5757. Before we hit the break, how's LSU doing in the budget this year?
I think they're doing well. I think higher education is doing well. We have a good relationship right now with the Board of Regents, and I think we're in pretty good shape.
We shall return with State Representative Steve Carter after this 90-second pause on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Steve Carter is with us, state representative from Baton Rouge. Inkster Show at WRKF.org if you'd like to reach us online. Steve Carter was the associate athletic director at LSU after being the tennis coach and a star tennis player at Tigertown before that. And when he was associate AD, Dale Brown was in full bloom as basketball coach. Shaquille O'Neal was arriving as a 17-year-old freshman from San Antonio. And this week, it was announced that they will be entering the College Basketball Hall of Fame in Kansas City. So, congratulations.
That was great days, I tell you. It was fun. Dale did a marvelous job of getting everybody excited and recruited well and had great teams he brought in. And it was Boy, that was a great day. In fact, I remember when we played Kentucky and Kyle Macy was here, and those son of a guns were number one in the country, and we fouled everybody out. And I remember old Floyd Bailey having to go to the free throw line in overtime. You remember that? And Floyd couldn't hit the, you know, had, but he sank two free throws and won the game for us. It was great, and I lost 2 years out of my life on that game.
95-94, February 11th, 1978.
Good man.
Yeah, I remember. Nathan downtown. Nathan, good morning. You're on the air with Steve Carter.
Hi, yes, Representative Carter. I wanted to ask about your involvement with the Louisiana Legislative Youth Advisory Council in the past and see if you could maybe elaborate on your involvement with their bill about volunteer certificates on high school diplomas. And I'll take my call off the air. Thanks.
I assume that you're involved with that. If so, I applaud you for being involved because that is a great organization. They meet quite often. They meet over in the Senate. I've been involved with them. And I was involved when they discussed that particular piece of legislation. They wanted to get involved in a process, and I encouraged people to get involved in a process and to come down and to testify, create a bill. I'll be glad to, you know, to introduce the bill. They have introduced the bill, and it is a great bill. And I think that it comes in front of my committee sometime as soon as we get through with Common Core. And I think it's a bill that should pass out of the House and go over to the Senate. So I applaud you for introducing that particular bill.
297-5633, Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, good morning. You're on the air with Steve Carter.
Good morning. Good morning, Jim. My question is this. I'd be very curious to know what the outcomes have been in those school districts that have broken away to date. Like, how many kids out of Baker qualify for TOPS? How many kids out of Zachary and Central are you know, get good enough grades in those systems to go to get the TOPS program? And since we're privatizing the states and institutions out the wazoo, where does the those new charter schools come into play? I just personally know in my family, we thought that the St. Charles Parish would be the great end-all, be-all of a school district, and it turns out those were not the best academic outcomes there in my family. So anyway, that's my question, sir.
I apologize. I do not have the statistics on TOPS in front of me for those particular areas. If you will call again my office, I'll attempt to try to get that information. I can give you the people who have that particular data for you. But as far as the charter schools are concerned, I'm as you know, a proponent of charter schools. But basically, my philosophy is I want every youngster to have an opportunity to receive a great education. There are a lot of options out there, and I want parents to have options for their youngsters. I know, and I'm sure that you are aware also, that if a youngster does not receive a good education, they probably are not going to have an opportunity to have a great quality of life. And that's my passion, is to try to make sure that every youngster has an opportunity. My real passion, sir, to be honest with you, is early childhood. We don't put enough money into youngsters that are 3 or 4 years old. We need to do that because the dollars that we put in on the front end, are we save tenfold on the back end. So again, I do feel like, you know, in a charter situation, if you are a charter and you don't perform, they close your doors in 5 years. In public schools, they don't close your doors. You continue, you try to improve, but I'm a proponent of trying to give every youngster an opportunity, regardless of what it might be, a quality education.
297-5633 in our remaining moments with Steve Carter. And once again, his legislative office number is 225-362-5305. A man who didn't get into politics until 2007 and won his race over Kyle Ardoin by what?
80 votes.
87 votes?
Yes, sir.
87, yeah, landslide for Steve Carter, 50.4%. You represent District 68. Many LSU employees are in that district. Yesterday we had Kelly Scott Kelly. She's a professor of art at LSU, and she was saying that her particular building is in terrible disrepair, that the ceiling caved in not so long ago. And I don't think her story is unique to the Department of Art. I think it's something that is going on in other places at LSU because of the cuts to higher education and the infrastructure being affected, what can be done?
Well, not only at LSU, but other schools are across the state, and particularly Southern. I've been out there a couple of times, and they have an awful lot of problems.
No doubt.
Franklin Foyle introduced a bill last year. I don't know the exact dollar amount, but there is a dollar that is put onto the fees of the students that will go into a fund to create and try to eliminate that particular problem of infrastructure problems at the higher the institutions of higher learning. Hopefully that's being done as we speak. It's going to take a good bit of money. I know the governor has put some money into that, and we're trying to solve the problem, but it's been going on for quite some time. And again, the biggest problem you have, Jim, is the way that the Constitution is set up. And the Constitution is set up to where, you know, higher ed is not protected. And you need to have a constitutional convention to attempt to undedicate some of the funds that are dedicated, because in the event that there's a budget shortfall, the problem is that the dollars have to come out initially of health and higher ed. And so the governor has tried to do the best he can with the dollars that we have. It's just that our hands are tied from a budgetary standpoint, simply because the Constitution has certain dollars that are mandated, and we just can't touch those dollars.
But the governor has also been averse to raising any taxes, new taxes.
Correct.
That would perhaps replenish some of the cuts to higher education.
Yes, that's his philosophy. He's stuck with his philosophy. And, of course, we have something going on right now is a toll road. The dollars are not there, and we've got to find a way to solve the problems of traffic in our city. And so we've presented to him, and he's given us some dollars, I hope, to study a toll road. And so that's at least a step in the right direction.
Where would the toll road be?
The toll road is what they call the bump, and the bump is from Gonzales along Airline Highway all the way over the old Mississippi River Bridge, and then connects with I-10 in West Baton Rouge.
Okay. Now, is your district, does it include South Downs?
Yes.
Okay, so I don't know how familiar you are about this dispute regarding Steve Myers and Paul Nakhan, both of whom have been on this show this week, but Myers is now offering Section 8 housing in that neighborhood. What do you think?
I'm going to let the courts decide. I love Steve. I know Steve very well. I know both sides are very passionate about what they're trying to do. But I don't, to be honest with you. I'll try to stick to education issues, and I'm not going to...
You're really going to punt on that one.
I don't want to get too involved in that particular issue.
You do have two passionate people, and there has been a development, and Steve Myers is slated to be with us in the last few moments of the show today. But Steve Carter is a mover and shaker at the Capitol. He's had a long history in this community and served our country with great distinction in the United States Air Force. Captain Carter.
Well, I had great times. I've served 5 years in the Air Force. It's some of the best times of my life. But right now I'm having a good time, too, only because I have a chance to make a difference, and I want to try to make a difference. I try to do the right thing, and education is my passion, and I'll continue to try to ensure that every youngster in the state gets an opportunity to have a quality education.
Thank you, Representative Carter. Good to talk with you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Have a great show. Anytime.
That's a deal. And now we're talking with former UNO Chancellor Tim Ryan. Good morning, Chancellor Ryan.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's good to hear your voice again. And you've been involved in some issues in particular regarding higher education. You know, it's sometimes rough and tumble down at the Capitol, isn't it?
That's an understatement, yes. Now that I'm retired from the university after almost 35 years, the last 7 years as chancellor, I don't miss it at all. That is, visiting the Capitol.
Well, I mentioned Steve Myers, and he once said, nobody leaves LSU happy, and you were part of the LSU system. And as we know, Louisiana State University can be quite a political cesspool, can't it?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It's really, I think, unfortunate. The universities, all of the universities in the state, I think, have been constrained by politics for too long. And I know it's inevitable, it's state dollars, but with the two-thirds vote required to raise tuition, with the proliferation of systems and the way the systems are appointed, it just makes it very difficult to try to move your institution forward. It's I don't know how anybody does it in Louisiana public higher education now. It's just almost impossible because of the constraints that you face, and politics is a big part of it.
And you speak as a person who spent 35 years in the system.
That's right. 35 years.
297-5633, if you'd like to join the conversation. We're talking with UNO Chancellor Tim Ryan, who was given the gate as the chancellor at UNO when John Lombardi was president of the LSU system. UNO has since moved out of the LSU system. What do you think of that?
I think in the long run, everybody's struggling now, but I think in the long run, that's going to be the best thing for the University of New Orleans. I believe that under the LSU system, as I said, and somewhat facetiously, maybe not totally facetiously, but somewhat facetiously, the priority list for the LSU Board of Supervisors was LSU football, number one, LSU A&M, number two, the Health Sciences Center, number three, and everybody else was tied for last. And that's the way it should be. I mean, that's the nature of a flagship institution. And I think UNO got lost in that system. In the University of Louisiana system, UNO is a member of equals. It's a similar institution, certainly in scope to schools like ULL and Louisiana Tech, in terms of its graduate mission and research mission. So it really fits in better, I think, with the schools in the UL system. So, and now that the chancellor of the LSU Baton Rouge campus is now also the president of the system, which was not the case when I was at UNO, I think it makes it even more difficult for a campus trying to be a research campus, an entity like UNO, to compete for just the attention and the permission to do the things that you need to do to make that campus a viable one. So I think in the long run, the University of New Orleans is much better off out of the LSU system.
Well, before he became chancellor at the University of New Orleans, Tim Ryan was noted as one of the state's top economists, and he is still involved in counting dollars and cents, and you're involved in something called the Master Plan. Tell us about this.
Well, I did a study. I'm not involved technically. The Master Plan was a document that the CPRA, the Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority of the state, has crafted over several years, and there's several iterations. And in 2012, they produce the latest version of the master. I think it's up due for an upgrade in like 2017. But anyway, the 2012 master plan was adopted by the CPRA and then endorsed by the legislature. I think it was a unanimous vote in 2012 of the Louisiana legislature. And what the plan, the master plan, does is set the plan and the timetable for coastal restoration. It looks at what we need to do to restore the land loss, or at least keep from losing additional land. As you know, we're losing square miles after square miles on an annual basis, and that land loss is accelerating. What I did in a recent study was to look at what would the state benefit in terms of jobs, in terms of business opportunities, in terms of dollars, if we fund the master plan. The master plan basically establishes two levels or a range of levels. The minimally acceptable level in the 2012 master plan is $50 billion spent over 50 years of hurricane protection and coastal restoration. And the actual, I think, preferred level is $100 billion. And what I did was look at the exercise from an economic point of view of if we did spend this money and restore the coast, what would the economic benefit to Louisiana be of that activity?
What would it be?
Well, it would be huge. I mean, there were four components that I looked at. One, the first component is just the actual construction itself. I mean, this is a major endeavor. If we spend even $50 billion, which is the lower level, over 50 years, that's $1 billion a year of construction projects, levee building and moving sediment diversion projects and moving mud and dirt and all kinds of heavy construction projects. That creates a large number of jobs. The second component is that before you can actually start moving the dirt and diverting the river and creating these projects, you need to do the science and engineering studies. We've already started to develop an infant industry in coastal science and engineering. But if we put these kinds of resources into funding coastal science and research for Louisiana companies, Louisiana universities, I mean, really throughout the southern part of Louisiana, just about all the major universities have coastal scientists looking at this. If we could really kickstart that industry, we'd not only be able to do the work here in-house in Louisiana, but we could export this technology to other parts of the world and other parts of the United States. The Dutch have a monopoly on this business. And in 2010, Dutch companies, private companies, did almost $9 billion in 1 year, and that's an ongoing, but $9 billion in export science and engineering work, consulting with the rest of the world on solving their coastal issues and water management issues. I don't think we'll surpass the Dutch, but we could certainly carve into that market, and that will create significant jobs for Louisiana, Louisiana universities, Louisiana businesses. The third aspect of how we could create jobs is we know that insurance costs, flood insurance and homeowners insurance for both individuals and businesses are going up. The president just signed a law that mitigated some of the initial impact of that. But we still know that those costs are going up. And if we have a major storm, or when we have a major storm, if we have significant damage, the costs are going to rise even higher.
We'll return and spend a few more minutes with Tim Ryan, Dr. Ryan, the former chancellor at UNO, who's giving his assessment of the master plan for coastal restoration. Back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, and we're wrapping it up with Dr. Tim Ryan, the former University of New Orleans chancellor, who is bullish on the master plan for coastal restoration. And as we were hitting the break, you were talking about the insurance costs and how this would be a benefit just in the process of reducing those costs.
Absolutely. Keeping insurance costs down, making it easier for both businesses and residents to live and work in Louisiana and to attract new businesses in. And then finally, just quickly, the final component is similar to insurance costs, but it's reducing uninsured damages. When Katrina hit, over half of the damages were uninsured, meaning borne by the homeowners, the residents, the businesses in Louisiana.
John on Highland, or Highlander, good morning, you're on. Please be brief, you're on with Chancellor Ryan, John.
Good morning. Chancellor, you moved on from education, but could you give a succinct description of what has happened to higher ed here in the last 6 years or so?
What about the state of higher education over the last 6 years during, I guess John's referring to the Jindal years?
I think what's happened is a series of significant budget cuts, which have been, to some extent, offset by tuition increases, which have made it more and more difficult for many citizens of Louisiana to go to the public institutions of higher education, which has caused enrollment declines, which has further exacerbated the financial problem. So I think it's been a real tough time for all of higher ed in Louisiana, and it's primarily financial.
Well, we thank you for joining us today, and look forward to talking with you again.
Anytime,
you're
Jim.
A straight shooter, Tim Ryan. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. And we're joined in studio now by the publisher of Red Stick Magazine, Jeremy White, who is involved in the Gridiron Show, which is tonight, tomorrow night, as journalists and former journalists, many of whom are now state workers themselves, will spoof the politicians of Louisiana. And Jeremy has the assignment of being Governor Bobby Jindal. You look just like him.
Absolutely. Yeah, he's got a chrome dome just like me.
I mean, I wouldn't be able to recognize the difference if he were in this room.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have to wear a wig for the second year in a row. The first year I was able to portray the governor sans wig, but Ronnie Stutz, our esteemed director, suggested I put on something.
The governor will be there tonight.
Yes, he will be there tonight. He's always there on Friday. He's got to leave his weekends open for traveling.
This is the VFW Hall, right?
The American Legion Hall. American Legion Hall, Nicholson's Post on the corner of Wooddale and Florida, right behind Pier 1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been there for a few years, and right. I went there and left, came back. And it is the longest, I think, the longest gridiron show in the United States.
That's what I hear. I think I saw the number 63 on the tickets for this one. So as far as I know, it's the consecutive. So,
well, what about some of the skits, Jeremy? What are some of the highlights, if you can kind of give us?
Oh, we can give a little tease. Of course, it wouldn't be gridiron without a shirtless Smiley Anders. You'll get a chance to see that. That's a lovely sight, of course.
So is he playing Vladimir Putin?
No, but he does play another dictator, communist, despot, which is going to be a good skit. You got to show up for that. And we've got, of course, some stuff about the levee board. We've got stuff about Jindal traveling. We've got economic development. We've got some stuff about D.D. Slaughter. We're going to touch on a lot of the stuff that you would expect us to lampoon. We do it.
Now, will David Vitter be in this year's show?
I believe we do have Vitter in the show. I believe we.
Well, that would seem to be manna from heaven.
I think we have Vitter in the show. It's kind of hard because sometimes we're back there doing changes.
Well,
and
I would hope so. What about Senator Landrieu?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Senator Landrieu is in there along with Jim Donilon and Bill Cassidy. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we've got some skits involving them.
Well, it shapes up as a good political year, and Cassidy and Landrieu are the favorites to make a runoff in December. And who knows, that race may determine which party controls the United States Senate. So all eyes could be on Louisiana.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, Governor Jindal is a guy who has been played now by a few different people. I remember Jordan Bloom. Was Governor Jindal.
Jan Moeller.
And now it's Jeremy White, who has some abilities.
Well, I appreciate that.
But when he's in the audience with his wife, and you're taking at times some rather pointed shots at him,
mm-hmm.
Does it make you uncomfortable in any way?
Not really. No, I think we do it in pretty good fun. I tell you, the most uncomfortable part I had, uncomfortable moment I had was, I think it was last year when Edwin Edwards appeared for the show, and we actually inserted him in at the end of the opener. We had Chuck Paradin and Meg Casper were playing Edwin and Trina, and then at the end of the opener, we had the actual Edwards and Trina come out, and we had some lines set up for them to deliver, and they were well written lines and funny lines, but then within two words I knew he was going rogue. He was going off script, and he was improvising, and the line he delivered was 10 times funnier, but it was really pointed at Governor Jindal.
Boy.
And I almost felt bad for him.
Well, I think if this congressional thing doesn't work out for him, he can be a gridiron writer next year.
Oh,
it'd be the funniest show on record.
Oh, absolutely. I was laughing watching the announcement at the press club.
All right.
And I was almost envious at his comedic timing and his deadpan delivery. He's 86 years old and still sharp as a tack and can still throw a one-liner at you that'll zing you.
No doubt about that. And now he's running for Congress, and it'll be another fun political year in large part because of him.
Mm-hmm.
And he has been a feature of the show even when he was in prison. People were playing Edwin Edwards.
I'm just glad we don't have to worry about hauling out prison bars for a skit this year.
But Chuck Paradin will be
absolutely. EWE. Chuck does a fantastic job as Edwin Edwards.
Well, your publication is right in line with what the Gridiron Show does. It's somewhat satirical.
Right. We're all digital, by the way. Now we're the Red Stick. It's all online, and so we can be a little bit more responsive, a lot more responsive to things that happen in the world within a day or two. Hopefully, we can get something. Sometimes, right as it's happening, we can get it out there. And we're satire, irreverent humor. We're the digital offspring of the Red Stick magazine.
You still do the Blood Alcohol Championship series?
Yes, we do.
Right?
Yes, we do. We still do that. Every month we do the top 10. We award the top recipient the Judge Don Johnson Trophy, and we also will throw out like an honorable mention every now and then for somebody who may not necessarily qualify to be a BACS participant, yeah. But we throw it out there.
Has anybody ever complained about being featured?
Occasionally, once in a while, but not really. We actually had the reality TV star who was on Survivor found out we did a piece on her DWI in town a couple of months ago, and a couple of her fans were a little upset about it, but it was all bluster.
I'm looking through some recent observations from Red Stick.
Uh-oh.
The biggest Oscar snub happened 41 years ago. What happened
41
years ago?
I've been waiting to write on that. That happened in 1973 Oscars for 1972 movies. Best original song, Across 110th Street by Bobby Womack. One of the greatest R&B songs ever. It's the first track on his Bobby Womack Greatest Hits, The Soul Years. Fantastic song, timeless, used by Quentin Tarantino and Jackie Brown.
Which got?
It was not even nominated.
What won that year?
The theme from the Poseidon Adventure. The Morning After.
Yeah. Maureen McGovern.
Yeah.
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 Yeah, okay.
Which was also the theme song of the succubus in the South Park episode where Chef, voiced by Isaac Hayes, was getting married to a succubus.
All right, so we can tell you're not a fan of... No. Theme from the Poseidon.
No, not at all.
But Red Stick Magazine is still offering its irreverent commentary on the world at large, and occasionally takes pot shots at radio talk show hosts.
Occasionally. Although I think we do more towards TV folks.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, the topic that we're about to segue to is one that Red Stick, I'm sure, would have some fun with, but this is a serious issue regarding housing in Baton Rouge and a court fight that has reached the Louisiana Supreme Court. I'm surprised this hasn't made the cut for the Gridiron Show.
Mm-hmm.
And as I stated a few days ago, Steve Myers and Paul Nockan were on this program in the studio where you are now.
Right.
2 years ago, and almost came to blows.
Oh, wow.
They were on the show this week at different times, and Nockan's the one who has made news. I'm reading a story from NOLA.com saying Southside board member says he doesn't want poor people in his neighborhood, quoting remarks that Mr. Nockan made on this program about his aversion to having Section 8 housing in his neighborhood and on three streets where Mr. Myers owns homes on Morning Glory, Cedardale, and Cherrydale.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Myers has joined us at my request because I understand there's been a development overnight regarding this. Good morning, Steve Myers.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mr. Stick.
What happened overnight?
Well, our signs after the appearance of the other day, suddenly the Section 8 signs, one of them was knocked down, and three of them, Section 8 signs, disappeared. So that happens, you know.
Well, somebody might not like the signs.
Well, it's not really their business. They've got illegal signs all through South Downs to pay the Southside Civic Association homeowner dues. They're in the median. They're cluttering up the look of the neighborhood. And these signs are all on private property. And there is a right under the Unified Development Code to have a sign, to place a for rent sign. It was all within reason. I'm not pointing the fingers at anybody. It could have been pranksters, but the timing was coincidental.
So are you calling the police?
No, I'm making a police report, certainly, because I want them to be on the lookout. You know, it's kind of sad. You know, I was reading quotes last night, and the Buddha said, in a controversy, the instant we feel anger, We've already ceased striving for the truth and have begun striving for ourselves. And I think what's happened is that for whatever reason, the Southside people have made up their mind about what's true. I just can't imagine why they object to someone challenging a law based on constitutionality. I mean, that's the American way. So, but they've decided what's the truth, and they'll go to any extremes in order to carry out the vigilante justice that they're known for.
Well, Paul Nikan is a member of the Southside Board, but I don't know that he speaks for every person on that board, Steve.
Well, I don't think President Obama speaks for every American either, but he does in foreign policy to some extent. So I'll leave that to better minds to decide when a board member who is assigned the task of A1 enforcement speaks for the board or speaks for themselves.
Well, Nikan was on this show the day after you appeared, and I'm not sure you heard the program, but he says, you see, all the trouble we have in Baton Rouge and other cities with people that don't have much, and he's making reference to poor people, saying he doesn't want Section 8 recipients to be in his neighborhood. What do you think?
Well, I mean, the first thing, I think it was very strange, odd, disturbing behavior. And the second thing I thought was, man, I've got a permanent parking spot in this guy's head. I mean, he's obsessed, he's tormented, hateful, spiteful, bigoted. But interestingly, on the same day I think he was on the show, the city council had an amendment to Title 15, which was relative to discrimination and unlawful discrimination in housing, and would have created the East Baton Rouge Parish Human Relations Commission. It's coming up in April, I think, now. But I think it's situations like this where people make it known that people are not welcome in their neighborhood that caused Council Member Marcel and some others to introduce this type of legislation.
I remember when Jimmy Carter ran for president in 1976, he created some controversy when he said we needed to preserve ethnic purity in neighborhoods. And Paul says we'd like to have everybody in the neighborhood like everybody else. So he's essentially saying what President Carter said 38 years ago. And some say, look, at least he's got the guts to come forward and say what he believes, even if you disagree with him.
Well, yeah, some say that. I don't have a problem with someone saying something stupid, but I mean that doesn't mean that it's correct. You know, interestingly enough, I would point you and listeners to the Advocate this morning on 8C. It really is an interesting coincidence. They talk about the grandfather clause after the 15th Amendment was instituted, allowing slaves the right to vote, and it talks about how all the legislatures found all these different ways to disenfranchise blacks after that happened. This law was passed in 1954 after Brown versus Board of Education essentially eliminated separate but equal. Now, that didn't apply to neighborhoods, but they were pretty clear it was separate but equal neighborhoods at the time. So, you know, this is an old, antiquated, arcane law, and we may be 15 years ahead of our time, but eventually it will go down. And, you know, we've started a University Garden Civic Association because...
All right, I do want to ask you before we leave, Steve... You say those signs were stolen, and we're taking you at your word. I'm sure they were, if you say they were. But do you have other signs up now?
I've got an order in right now. We'll put them up as fast as they can take them down, if that's what the game they want to play.
Okay. Well, thank you, and we'll follow the court case, and thanks for joining us on Short
Notice.
You're
welcome, Jim. Thanks for all you do for us and for constitutional rights.
Thank you, sir. And Jeremy White, I'm sure Redstick will be
covering this story with earnest zeal. Yeah, we may have something, a little something on there.
But
yeah.
It does say something about our community that all these years after integration, we still have largely segregated neighborhoods.
Yeah, we do. In most places, yeah, in a lot of places we do. Yeah, it's something we occasionally will talk about on our podcast that we have now. We have a weekly podcast, the Redstick Podcast, and so we'll sometimes chat about that. And it's myself and a couple of comics or improv folks that will come on, and we'll have a good time with it. We'll talk about some serious topics every now and then, but we try to be light about it. So, and tickets for Gridiron, we do have some tickets available for Saturday. You can email gridironshowbr@yahoo.com if you're interested.
Or just show up at
the
American Legion Hall. What time does it start?
6:30 doors open, 7:30 curtain opens.
That's tonight and tomorrow night, but tonight's a sellout.
Tonight's a sellout, so you're going to have to get your
and
tickets.
And tomorrow night, Governor Jindal does the rebuttal tonight. Tomorrow night, it'll be...
Lieutenant Governor Jay Darden.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Jeremy White.
Thank you.
And we shall return Monday. Thank you for listening. For Frank Barnett, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.